get into today's conversation, I want to quickly tell you the story of how a t-shirt launched a fast food worker into cult stardom. Daniel Johnston was working the drive-thru at a McDonald's in Austin, Texas in the mid to late 1980s. For years, he had been self-releasing tapes of his lo-fi homemade music. He'd hand out free tapes to anyone who would take one. He'd even hand out free tapes to people coming through the drive-thru at work. If you've ever heard a Daniel Johnston record, you know that it's not the kind of audio aesthetic that immediately grabs your attention and says, listen to this. This is important once-in-a-lifetime music. The person who made this is a bona fide musical genius. Quite the contrary, Daniel's music is all pretty simple. And even, as many critics have pointed out over the years, kind of childish in its lack of any kind of lyrical intricacy or melodic complexity. He's not a particularly gifted singer in the conventional sense, or a particularly great guitar player, but that's where the magic of Daniel's voice resides. In his innocent, childlike charm, and endearing lack of any kind of pretense. He was playing shows steadily, and handing out his crude, self-made tapes, when a manic, depressive, and schizophrenic episode landed him in an involuntary stay at a psychiatric facility. And it was while he was awaiting release from this facility, in the early 90s, that one of the most popular names in music over the last 50 years was photographed wearing a shirt that had artwork from Daniel's album, Hi, How Are You, on it. All it took was one photo of Kurt Cobain showing public support for this unknown, simple outsider artist to spark a bidding war from record labels looking to cash in on the sudden interest swirling around Daniel Johnston and his unique brand of music. Classic American big break story, right? You've heard it 1,000 times. Unknown working class dreamer gets a shout out from a star and uses that one simple gesture to fuel an entirely new life. My guest today has seen firsthand the power of how a well-placed public show of support from a big name can help kickstart a fledgling career. She believes that it is the responsible thing for an artist to do when they've been fortunate enough to reach a certain level of success. And she decided to make an entire organization dedicated to doing just that. Now, maybe you've heard of Rain Phoenix, and maybe you haven't. Either way, I'm willing to bet you've heard of her brothers, River and Joaquin. Rain has lived a life around people who are getting breaks and opportunities due to a mixture of hard work, talent, and fortunate connections. She's seen how helpful a kind word or simple introduction can be. She created Launch Left with the mission of partnering with established stars to launch tomorrow's undiscovered voices. It's a lovely mission, and I'm so thrilled and honored that she wanted to zoom in and chat with all of us about it today. From a Blankenfort recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to Rain Phoenix about her mission to launch the next big artist through her organization, Launch Left. Cool. Well, you're here. We're back. We just talked on your show, and we're back on my show now.
Talkaholics.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. I'm so happy I made your acquaintance via the internet. It's so much fun to meet new creative friends online, and that's one of the fun things about doing this is in the era that we're doing it in is like the ability to connect with people that you otherwise probably never would have. And so yeah, it's cool to have you here. Tell me a little bit about, let's just jump right into it. Tell me a little bit about Launch Left and how you got the idea to start it and what sort of drives you in perpetuating this project and keeping the propulsion forward.
Yeah, no problem. So in lieu of a very long-winded story of like what the details of what made me start it, I'll try and give like a quick broad overview. I had a band and I had booked a show, and a couple weeks before I was like, oh, I'm so sick of playing and being like the lead singer in a band, and I decided to bring some friends together, multiple lead singers, and do like a super group for charity instead. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, why don't we just use this venue, this time, and raise money for Haiti? This was right after the earthquakes in Haiti. And that cool. was sort of the dawn of Launch Left, the concept of bringing like-minded artists together around activism and giving back. But then also that, you know, some of the artists were more well-known. Flea played in that band at one point.
Right.
Angela McCluskey. There were just different, it was a different groups of artists that would play, or different people. Some were well known, some unknown. And that was the sort of dawn of, oh wow, you know, people with more of a platform can tip their hat to artists that are not known and can help bring eyes and ears to their music or their yeah. art or film. So that was sort of the beginning. And then over the course of some years, it morphed into Launch Left, and this idea that how can we practice that in a very cheap way, because I didn't have the funds to build this bigger vision I had of like a full platform yet, and an app mm-hmm. and all these other things. So a podcast seemed like the most financially responsible way to talk about it, put the proof of concept sure. out there. And so that's sort of how the dawn of the podcast came. But really the heart of what Launch Left is this idea of an ecosystem of artists helping artists, artists launching artists, artists using their art as a force for culture change and for pointing to the things they do for the broader picture, for the vaster world, and not just a kind of self-centered, I want to be a star, I want to you know, everyone sure. to know of me. So that's sort of like cultivating an intentional space for artists to do that, or to talk to artists that are doing that, that will inspire other emerging and upcoming artists to like use their gifts in a more giving capacity than just self-centered. Because I believe that culturally we've kind of been habituated to be really self-centered about everything, and it's all about a bottom mm-hmm. dollar, right? And money. So, yeah. And the capitalist sort of way of seeing things has been a big part of that. So it was sort of reimagining, how can everyone make money and artists make money and be seen, but also be a force for good in the process of that and help each other too?
Yeah, I think one of the things that drew me in a lot when I went to the website, and when I was sort of like watching the series, the Big Up series, and watching a lot of the media that you've put out so far with Launch Left, is this idea of bigger names helping out smaller names. There's something about it's no secret to the audiences and to people who consume art that there exists in a capitalistic framework a tiered system, if you will, of like levels that people have achieved. And I like when that only exists as a superficial framework, but when in reality people can recognize that like the only real difference between me and you, you know, like a person on a certain tier and someone on maybe a lower tier, quote unquote, I'm using hand quotes with that, is just the level of recognition they've been able to achieve, or the level of like eyes on their work they've been able to get. And I love when people who have achieved a certain tier are willing to reach backwards and say, hey, everyone needs a hand at some point. Everyone needs someone to shine the spotlight, or to say like, I don't really need it anymore. The spotlight's on me whether or not I want it. And now I actually can use this to say, here's some cool people doing some cool things. And I mean, that's something I see all the time online with new media content creators, is like, geez, I find people on TikTok who have like 400 followers and they're making gorgeous music in their bedroom. And it's just kind of like, what does this person have to do to get a few more people to hear them, or just to get someone to maybe give them a shot to record an EP in a nice studio, you know? And that's one of the things that I think I'm really drawn to. You do have connections with people in these tiers, which makes that accessible. And that's something that not a lot of people have.
That's exactly right. And that was kind of what I realized, like, that main, you know, that was one of the main concept being, you know, getting artists that do care and do want to, like you said, reach back and use their light, shine their light on other artists, that mm-hmm. I actually am in a interesting position where I do know enough of them and can share with them this vision of like, how easy it is to just give back really quickly by like, hey, I like this, that through this, I was able to use my contacts to help smaller artists be seen, because I'm not in myself, I don't have a big enough light to just do that. But through the show, I'm able to pull people in who might be able to do that. And then also, it's all relative, right? Like, I have more visibility than totally unknown artists. So whenever I can, I do. And I really like doing producing and discovering and curation. That's like my my passion within Launch Left, is that, you know, picking artists I think are really doing great work. And that's kind of been the launch. That's why the launch of the label happened officially really in 2020, was I got, you know, after the quarantine hit, that was something that seemed really important, was for me to highlight artists that were in their bedroom making great songs. Yeah. And also to like, point it back to Alec's Attic, which was my brother River in my band when I was a teenager, and how he not only helped me, but he was always an advocate for other artists and lifting them up. So he became the launcher, you know, like his memory and his music was encapsulated this bigger vision of these single rollouts from unknown artists that led up to the release of our Alec's Attic single. So all of that was kind of like came to me last year, like during quarantine, because what, you know, we had time to think like, what can I do? For me, I'm always like, what can I do to be of greatest value and benefit in the artist community in the ways that I can connect and launch? How can I do something good this year? You know, and that was kind of what I asked myself. And that campaign was the outcome of asking that question. And I feel really proud about it. And we, you know, sold out the vinyl for his thing. We were able to make vinyl for the other artists because of that. You know, like,
amazing.
That kind of thing, that solidarity, that coming together, it's always better with collaboration. And that's really the heart space core ethic of Launch Left, is collaboration over competition, something that we're not used to.
People don't realize that printing vinyl for a independently produced album is actually really expensive. And I mean, making an album, if you want to do it right and well, no matter what, it's going to require some level of investment. But people have more and more the tools to make pretty good sounding stuff from their bedrooms, like we've been talking about. They can basically, you know, procure the sound equipment and the equipment necessary to do all the instrumentation and everything. And if they've got a friend that does mixing and mastering or audio engineering, or if they want to learn that, like we were talking about at the beginning, they can figure out how to mix and master their album and make it sound professional and crisp and clean and everything. But printing vinyl is expensive, and I found this out this year. I made my album and I wanted to print like 100 vinyl records, because that's usually like the smallest amount you can order from one of these places that does them. And the cheapest I could find it for was like $1,800. Like it's costly for people in a lower tax bracket.
Yes, sir. And I like, again, thanks to relationships and friendships, and, you know, when the pandemic hit, like so many people were doing more favors, like, you know, I was able to not because I was like, if I pay for mastering the Alec's Attic, can you vinyl master all these emerging artists? You know, those kinds of things. So I was able, but you're right, vinyl production, like you can kind of cut corners in other ways, but vinyl production, not so much. In that respect, I knew that the Alec's Attic would probably sell out, and that could afford enough to pay for a small batch of emerging artist singles. I did a compilation. I think I sent you a vinyl of that. I'm not sure if you've received it yet.
I haven't gotten it yet, but okay. I'm so excited.
Yeah, so it should be coming soon. But it's really neat to have like 8 emerging artists on one vinyl, and to be able to hear all these singles back to back, and they're mastered properly. Like, no, there were no corners cut, but you know, it was an investment that I knew I could pay back through the production of that. So that's the only way I can do things like that. And that's what Launch Left is about, is like these bigger artists that can help you know, small artists. And in a way, that's what Alakazadic was for this team of singles from eight unknown artists, was that was able to pay for that production from
the sale.
Isn't
it amazing the ways in which we have these experiences as artists that sort of like, in the moment when they happen, these incredibly painful experiences, these personal experiences, but the legacy of that, especially when you're with someone who meant something to you artistically or something, it has this ripple effect that can last for years. And it's so beautiful how something tragic can morph into something so wonderful for so many people. I relate a lot to the way that you connect with the story of what happened to your brother and the music that you made together, and you're still using it to produce and create more and more and more art, which seems so in line with honoring his legacy. The album I put out this last year, I had almost finished making it before my best friend took his own life in December of 2019. I was almost done making the record, and then that happened, and it completely changed the record for me. All of a sudden I was like, oh, he needs to become a more central character in this record. He needs to be more part of the sound and part of the feeling. And he was a huge supporter of my music and of me doing this. I have emails from him being like, if you ever quit music, I'm gonna come find you, and you can't quit, so I had a friend I commissioned. I'll show you right here on this. This is him. And I had my friend draw this by hand for the album art, and then the back of album art is a bunch of tributes to him. And and I wound up donating a portion of all the proceeds that I made from record sales to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. But it's really given birth to this whole extra thing where, like, he didn't used to be such a part of the art that I make, and I feel like he's sort of going to be a part of it now for the rest of my life, you know?
Right. No.
And it seems so lovely and appropriate.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm really sorry for your loss. It's never an easy thing, and it's interesting. It's like we have such a hard time in Western culture, specifically, even affirming that death happens, even though we know. Mm-hmm. Death and taxes are the two sure things. We really avoid thinking about it in a day-to-day way, and the impermanence and how quickly a best friend, a brother, a family member, ourselves can go. Like all of a sudden, no longer in this realm, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just, my heart to you. I'm sorry for your loss. And yes, I think that that's honestly the only way to get over the excruciating part about grief is to honor the person, and whatever that looks like for you, and whatever you feel like would, you know, honor them. That's probably the thing to do. Like, it's not like it has to be something where, like, oh, they love to crochet, so I have to make a crochet business. It's like whatever is in your heart to create, just to, like you said, bring them into the project. Like, they are now a part energetically. You know, they say energy never leaves. So passing away, you know, it's like, it's just a different realm, so to speak. So how do you honor that energy in that person?
Yes.
There's a quote that I have to read you, because
I
sent this to someone recently who lost his wife, and I just love it. It's one of my favorite quotes. It says, on the death of a friend, we should consider that the fates, through confidence, have devolved on us the task of a double living, that we have henceforth to fulfill the promise of our friend's life also in our own to the world. Henry David Thoreau.
Wow.
Isn't that pretty? I'm going to text it to you now, too, just so you have it. But it's really one of the more... I don't know. There's something... I'm really all about intentionality, which is a lot... It's in Launch Left, too, an intentional space for art and activism. That's part of our intro. You know, when you affirm... When you're conscious, right? And you're in awareness and you affirm something, you...
Yes.
It's more real and it's more understood, even if you don't talk about it. But when you, you know, whatever is like, I'm intentionally doing this. So that quote to me is like, it always reminds me the intentionality of including just in a heart space way, in an energy way. Like, I don't have to say it every time, but like, you know, your friend is always a part of your work somehow. You know, my brother is always a part of my work somehow. But it doesn't mean that it's, you know, I did make my first solo record was called River because I don't think I'd ever really intentionally affirmed that. Even though he was a part of everything and it was obvious that I was like continuing his legacy and in my own and those things, I never said it to the world, right? And that record was my empowerment of realizing that I needed to say it, as difficult as that was, you know, that that was part of the process.
That's been a big part of this for me too. I relate to everything you just said so much, but that's been a big part of this is not being afraid to state it out loud that I am doing this intentionally, that like, yes, I am being very clear about involving him in this process. And also that I'm not ashamed to talk about how he died, and that like, that's not something I don't want to feel like there's this weird stigma around that. Like it's just sort of like he was sick for a long time with this thing that kept getting at him, and it finally got him. I view it as like he had a terminal illness that was, you know, mm-hmm. preying on him. But like, I do think it's, yeah, to be able to state it out loud and say, yeah, I'm being intentional about involving this memory and this energy in my work is powerful. And yeah, and I wasn't a huge believer in energies or God or spirit until a few years ago. I got sober and had to like sort of recreate this relationship with that stuff. And I found out that just that process of being intentional, like you were saying, having the intention of connecting with a God energy or a source energy or some kind of spirit, just having that intention, there produces a result. It produces a physiological feeling in me. And whether that's my brain tricking myself into feeling that or it's real, I can't really tell the difference. And it makes me feel better. So,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, I love that you said that. I mean, for me, I think it's you know, externalizing too much. Mm-hmm. I had done that most of my life and never really picked something that I was like spiritually connected to, but I found a path that worked for me.
Sure.
Ultimately it's taking responsibility and realizing that that thing that you noticed that produced a result is you. It's your truth, right? It's mm-hmm. the core essence of all of us is pure and loving and compassionate and understanding and all. And we just, it's habit because of our culture. It's that's been heaped on us. So we think we're angry, sad, negative, raging, you know, have no spirituality, you know, fearful of all these things. But when we are intentional enough to say, is there something in me that can grow? Is there a little light in me that wants to grow, that is aware? Like, is there mm-hmm. a light of awareness in me? Even asking that question, like you said, it literally lights the little light in you. And then like how far you decide to take it, and, you know, using external inspiration from people who have done it before, or for some people that is a specific icon or religious icon, or, you know, the point is, whatever path gets you there, get there, right? Like, pick something,
right,
is what,
right.
And that was really profound when, you know, someone said that to me, like, there are so many different paths, just pick one, like, mm-hmm. because you want to grow that light. You want to become who you're here to be. We're here for such a short time. And that's certainly my understanding now as I push towards 50, is like, I have a very limited time left. You know, I want to think that I've used a lot of my life in service to that light and to growing my best potential and helping others, but not in an intentional way like I do now. And that has exponentially added to my ability to do a lot more. Just by affirming it, I can now do so much more than I was doing 5 years ago, because I was still like, how am I going to get up this mountain? It's all about me, right? And it wasn't like, wait, how can I help? It was, what do I get? Or how do I get there? Or, you know, in our small ways that we do that, or big ways. But I like the idea of whatever spiritual practice it might be, meditation, you know, a religious practice for some people, like whatever that is, that it grows that light. Like, that's all I realize that I want to do now is wake up a little bit more every day. And what I, my under, the thing that's helped me most is doing things for others, thinking about the artist community, thinking about artists that have, when I use that energy towards not, am I getting somewhere? What do I, is this mean? Do I have more of this? Do I have, and how is this helping? Has one person written me saying, thank you, you've inspired me to do more music or to do, that's for me what I've, now I've changed. I reorient success away from public display of everybody sees me and likes me to personal openness in my chest and like compassion and a wish to help others and seeing that response in others that it's been inspirational. That's what I now like. Success to me is when I'm able to physically, you know, hands-on see how something I've done has lifted someone else's spirits, especially in these times that are very unsure and very full of fear. It's been the most rewarding, and I've felt the most successful in my life doing that, you know?
That's so beautiful, and that's, I really do think that, like, service and doing things for other people is the cure-all to whatever ails you. Like, you're plagued by anxiety, you're plagued by fear, you're plagued by depression, whatever it is, get involved in figuring out how you can help someone else do what they're trying to do. Seriously, you're having a bad day, like freaking out, call someone and say, hey, how are you today? How's it going? How are you doing right now? Is there anything I can do for you? It's like magic. It's it's such magic medicine. So I agree with you 100% there. On that note, what are some of your favorite success stories that have come so far from Launch Left? That, like, some of your things you're most proud of with people that you've been able to help maybe get a little bit more visibility or a little bit more just like things done that they didn't think they could do before in that.
Yeah. Well, what's cool is that even just the platform itself and this idea of well-known artists launch emerging bands right now, you know, it's mostly been music in 2020. I'm starting this year to kind of open it up a little bit to other art forms, with music still being one of the main focuses. And, is that, I didn't have to do much but create the intentional space for that. And for it, for example, back in 2018, when I first started doing this out of like the bedroom, Connor Oberst launched Phoebe Bridgers, just shy of her release of her first record. And so like, that's an example of, I didn't do anything. So say, Connor, you want to launch someone? I'm trying to figure out how to do this thing, this podcast.
Did that happen with Launch Left, Connor Oberst and Phoebe?
Yeah.
Dude, do you understand that Phoebe Bridgers is to me the artist of 2020? Now I've known about Phoebe.
A lot of people share that with you.
Yeah. And I've known about Phoebe since like 2017 ish. And I was a big, huge fan of the first record and loved her tour that she did with Lucy Dacus and Julian Baker and like that trio that they formed, like big fan of hers. But this year I there was a lot of good music that came out in 2020, but I think Punisher is the album of 2020. I think that Phoebe is the artist of 2020. And like, that is crazy that, I mean, cause you're saying you didn't do anything, but you provided this space for that to happen. So that is so cool.
Yeah. So that's one of those success stories. I'm always like, And then what was really neat, what we really like to have happen with Launch Left is Phoebe went on to launch Charlie Hickey at a live show and sang with him. And that's on our YouTube. You can watch that episode. So yeah. It's pretty, that's fulfilling. But in terms of, for me, the biggest for 2020 was launching 8 new artists in the ramp up to the Alakazadic release and really seeing, you know, during a time of kind of great depression amongst artists who are live performers, who were supposed to go tour, who were making record, now they didn't know what to do, was that we created these like challenges that then fans got to be etched in the vinyl and all this stuff that happened. We, you know, was buoying the little community that I had of the, even of just these 8 artists, was like that we all kept each other not depressed in 2020. That was a huge success story for me. You know, it was just that, that they would reach out to me and say, thank you. Like, this is the one thing that kept me out of total freak out anxiety all year. It was like, I'm part of this thing. It's beautiful. My song is out. You've created a challenge, you know? And I was like, what? Same for me. I had something to do that I was helping. And so that was really, that was a good one for me for this year.
That's what's really cool too, is it can be as big as something like Phoebe Bridgers, and she goes on to have this massive year, this mammoth success, and then of course reaches back to help other people. It can be as noticeable as that, or it can be as small as you just helped me get to that next step that I really wasn't sure I could get to. Mm-hmm. You helped me just like get this thing recorded that I've sort of been kicking around and maybe too insecure or afraid to do anything with. And you helped me get the confidence to just like push forward to that next step. And that's just as useful and beautiful.
Rewarding for sure. I mean, like, you know, it's kind of an interesting metaphor for what we were talking about is like what, you know, what you value, how you see success, right? Success right. in an external way, like that's the Connor launching Phoebe is a very external, like, whoa, that was cool. Mm-hmm. Didn't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. And it really was a neat thing to be a part of. Now, of course, that's a really archived episode that you would have had to subscribe back in 2017 when we first launched a quick year. And so if you weren't part of that, sorry, you missed that launch, but it did happen. and you can be sure of it because we talk about it on the one where Phoebe launches Charlie Hickey. So she affirms that happened.
Well, and they went on to do Better Oblivion Community Center.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Like
yeah.
they, like they you know yeah. they collaborated together on that, and that was such a fantastic project, such a fantastic album. I don't know if they'll do another one together, but I hope.
That's amazing. It's really cool. So that versus something a little bit smaller and a little bit Launch Left's ecosystem with, you know, with these emerging artists and their singles. So it's like that was success to me just as well as how cool it was to see Phoebe Bridgers be launched by Connor Oberst. You know,
That's awesome.
Different kinds of success. Yeah.
But if you're having that kind of that gradient of success in your first 3 years of operation, to me it bodes well that, like, I think it all stems from, again, going back to intentionality and coming back to your intent in doing this, that your heart and your intention is really rooted in the right things and in the right space. And so it only naturally will continue to breed more and more growth and things like that, you know, going forward. And there's just so many people out there waiting to be launched or given that extra visibility, that it's only a matter of time before the next big one comes
So. Now the challenge is just, you know, I'd love to bring on other artists. The idea really is that Launch Left is also an employment space for artists. And that vision, that wish has not manifested yet in a big way. And I want to be able to bring on teams of artists to like be all the parts of Launch Left because there are many. So that's what this year is really about, becoming sustainable, and on top of that, even, you know, moving into the ability to bring on other creatives, because, you know, I think a brand like Launch Left, which is really by the artist for the artist, is better served with more collaborators involved. Like, I have a vision and I've been very intentional about it and I'm very passionate about it, but there are many other artists that are much better at like 90% of the things that I'm having to figure out and do alone or with one other person, you know, mm-hmm. or two other people as favors. And that, like, I'd much rather it be a whole team that's all getting paid and we're all in it together. Like, so that's what 2021 so I hope you're right about it can only kind of grow from here. Like, if it's done this well in the first block, then, because that's what I'm really focusing on this year is, okay, how do you do when something's kind of innovating in a space? It's hard to make money. People like it, but it's like niche, uh-huh. right? And that's okay. Right. I love being niche, but there also has to be a way that we can really sustain the arts. And I want Launch Left to be one of those avenues to being sustainable for other artists, like their lives, and they don't have to wait tables. They don't have, you know, they can work for a company that believes that art is the way forward and activism commingled and collaborating.
Yeah, because it could find, you know, there's so many ways that this could work so wonderfully, where it could find, like, when you're not working on your album or working on writing songs for your thing, if you want, we could maybe put you in touch with someone that we just found you know, you could offer production services or something, or say,
right,
you know, we've got a guy that we just did this person's album, but they're also a producer, and if you need a producer, they'd be fantastic probably for your sound. Link people up, you know, create those kinds of connections. And yeah,
exactly.
It is slow moving financially early on, but I do feel like you're in the right stream. Like, I feel like you're in the right emotional groove of like where this is rooted. And it feels like it's only a matter of time before you're able to have that kind of financial stability. It feels very much in the realm of, you seem like a very actions over results person, which I really believe in. And what I mean by that is, like, it's more important to just do the work and invest in it and like believe in the actions than to stress about like, am I getting the exact result that I want on the timeline that I want it? It's kind of like releasing that stuff and just going, I'm coming with the correct intention, and I'm continuing to invest in the work, and I believe in the work. I believe in what I'm doing, so I'm going to continue to do it. And whatever comes of it will come on its own time, and that's not something I need to like worry about forcing or controlling. You know, like it will come. When it's ready to come.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And again, you know, it brings it back to the intentionality, just because it's your motivation, right? What's my motivation in becoming sustainable and being an employment agency for artists as well? It's
right.
That artists can win, that artists don't have to wait tables, that art, like, that's, you know, that we all can do something meaningful in the world with our creative. Like, that's my motivation. It's not to become the richest person in the world,
right,
or
right.
own the most fancy company that everyone wishes they were. You know, it's like, it's really, that's the core ethos of what I want to do. And so as long as I stay there, I guess it doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as I can survive. Luckily these days, because, you know, one, I hate to say there's any positive of a pandemic, but there have been a few markers of whether environmental or, but, you know, is that I have to do it on Zoom, and that's a lot cheaper than trying to get a crew or go to a venue and bring all the cameras and all, you know what I mean? Like the cost has been manageable. It doesn't cost anything to keep
totally.
Going.
Audiences don't expect anything more than
exactly.
Zoom, than
right.
just a Zoom interview. They're not like, well, why isn't this shot in a studio with professional lighting? It's like,
right.
we're all used to watching all the late night shows are doing Zoom interviews, you know, like it's
yeah.
so.
It's changed that landscape to where it is affordable to do that right now. As we move more towards what's the bigger vision, I can breathe a little in the financial area. Whereas if this hadn't happened, I don't know if I could have kept going. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
But
yeah.
Anyway, I just really appreciate that you even wanted to have me on the podcast and talk about such deep things, because I really enjoy talking like this. This is my version of home.
I appreciate you being willing to come and do this. I really, really do. And I'm so glad that we got to talk a little bit more about what you're doing, because I think it's fantastic and I think it's really exciting. And I still feel like if it starts in 2017, I still feel like 2021 is early in a venture like this. And so, like, it's still growing and building. And I think you've got some good momentum and some really exciting energy behind it. And thank you so much, Rain, for coming and doing this.
Thank you.
I know I got to let you go. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the project before we jump off?
I wanted just to say that I absolutely love what you're doing in the world and in the digital space and in social media. I think, like, you know, I can't wait to see you blow up and be able to support yourself and make all the art you want without any hindrance there. And I look forward to the time that we get to collaborate as artists too. I think that would be really amazing. And I just found out you're a choreographer, which to me is like, I dance movement is one of my favorite forms of art, and I grew up dancing, so I was like, yeah, maybe we could do a fun interpretive dance to something one time together.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe we could do like a duet on TikTok.
Ooh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll tell you what, if I break anything big off this year, I'm giving money to Launch Left.
Yeah, it's so sweet. Well, thank you so much for this time with you, and I know you're probably going to hang up and start working on a sketch right away.
I think I've got one more thing I need to do today, and then I'm done.
Good.
And then my partner and I will watch, we've been watching all the Marvel movies again, so we'll watch the latest one of the next one in that series.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, well, that sounds fun. That sounds like a good quarantine Thursday.
Yeah. Well, cool. It's so great to talk to you. I hope we talk soon.
Yes, and, we will, for sure.
Okay.
Have a wonderful
Thanks so
day.
Much.
Thank you.
You too.
Okay. Bye.
All right. How cool was that, huh? I like that. I like that we didn't go too long. I'm going to try to do that from now on. Rain had like a hard out and she was like, I've got this much time. And I was like, okay, normally, you know me, I'm a long-winded, verbose motherfucker. And I talk a lot. And knowing that we only had like 45 minutes made me be like, we have to just hit the concise points. And then when we were done, I was like, why don't I always do that? I'm making you guys listen to like 90-minute conversations sometimes. What the hell is that? I'm cutting it down. I'm telling people 45 minutes, hard out. I'm just going to tell them I've got a hard out. I don't know why I would set up a recording session with someone when I've got a hard out, but that's what I'm going to be telling them. Cool. So you can find out more about Launch Left, of course, by going to launchleft.com, looking at who they're launching right now, following Launch Left on Instagram, on TikTok, following Rain on Instagram. You can listen to the Launch Left podcast or go to the Launch Left YouTube channel and watch the Big Up series. I was just on the Big Up series. You can watch my episode where we talk about me, and you know I like that because you know I like when things are about me. So yeah, there's other people being launched, but there's a Big Up episode about me, and that's my favorite because it's me. Okay, now we're going to do our favorite part of the show, our new favorite part. It's everyone's new favorite segment. What does TikTok think? We're live on TikTok right now. If you haven't been listening to the show recently, this is what we're doing now. We're recording the intro and outro to the show live on TikTok. And I go to TikTok in the outro for questions from the peanut gallery, from the audience, from the people who are listening, from you. So if you're listening to this right now and you're like, oh, I want to watch the show live every Sunday on my TikTok, we're doing this live and we're going to questions now. Robert O'Leman says, where are you from? Love your content, by the way. Always got me laughing. Well, I'm glad that you like the content. Glad we got you laughing. I'm from Salt Lake City. Raised in a suburb of Salt Lake called Sandy. Anybody out there know about Salt Lake City, Sandy, Brighton Bengals? That was my high school. Okay. BHS, B-E-N-G-A-L-S, Bengals are the best. I think I made up that cheer just now. I know that we did say B-E-N-G-A-L-S, but I don't think we said Bengals are the best at the end of it. I think I just added that because I'm awesome. And thank you for the question. Let's see what else we got here. The Real Triple H says, you look like someone who should be famous. Well, that's great because that's also what we're talking about. We're talking about getting launched. And how Rain Phoenix is trying to launch somebody, you know, trying to launch people, having Connor friggin' Oberst launch Phoebe Bridgers with her thing, and then they do Better Oblivion Community Center together, and they, you know, all that stuff. So I don't know. I look like a famous person to you, or someone who should be famous? Cool. I think you think that because you maybe see me a lot on your phone. But like, let's tell the casting offices over at like Warner Brothers and HBO that I look like someone who should be famous. Is that how it works? Is that how getting launched works? I know it does in certain contexts. I know that that's like what happened to Jennifer Lawrence is like some photographer saw her Instagram and was like, oh, I like that you look like that. And then he was like, can you act? And she could. And then Jennifer Lawrence. So I don't think that's going to happen for me. I don't think many people are going to look at my Instagram and be like, damn, that guy. But I'm glad that you think that. Jim Jam Jerome asks, how does one get on Launch Left? Good question. I wish I knew the answer to that question. Rain Phoenix reached out to me. Not the other way around. And imagine my surprise when I got that email. So I don't know. And I'm still not like, I got to say that there's like, I think there's a difference between being on the Big Up show and actually being like, because Launch Left is now a, it's a record label too. Like they have a, like, she didn't ask if her record, if I would want to be on the record label and like have like, do an album with them. And like, so I don't even think that I qualified to be launched. I don't think I'm getting launched. I think they have like a Big Up show where it's kind of like a shout out show where they'll do like a 10 minute YouTube shout out. And I got a shout out, very appreciative of that shout out, but I don't think I'm like part of like, I'm not on the launch pad. So I don't know how one procures a ticket to the launch. Will Wider says, tell me more about the McDonald's commercial. This is the third week in a row at the live show that people have asked me about the commercial. And the first 2 weeks I had like really like lame answers. I was like, I auditioned, I did a callback, I booked it, the end. I'll tell you a little bit more about it because people keep asking about it. It's fun. This was the first union set that I had worked on since the pandemic. I did a lot of non-union work this last year. It's fine. I only joined SAG when I did this commercial. I've been SAG eligible for years. And since I lived in right to work states, I never joined the union. But this year I did a lot of like non-union commercials. I did a non-union film this year. I was doing like music videos. I was on set a lot in 2020. When I say this year, I mean 2020. But the McDonald's commercial was the first union set that I had been on. And the non-union sets that I had been on, like, we're doing our best to be cautious and safe. People are wearing masks. There's hand sanitizer. There's social distancing going on. People are trying to get tested before they come to work and make sure that I just burped and now everyone in the podcast is going to hear that I burped. I'm sorry, guys. I'm so disrespectful sometimes to the listeners, and that's just what you get when you come and listen to this show. It's way different on the union sets. Like the testing is much more strict. And then like, there was even a moment where I was talking to the costume designer and she was handing me a shirt and someone on the production team, came by and like yelled at us and was like, 6 feet. 6 feet. And it was intense. And so like the costume designer had to like throw me a shirt to where I was like standing outside of my trailer, and it was just intense. The vibe was like everyone was really keyed up and tense. It was other than that, it was a pretty seamless shoot. We were done in a few hours. It was really easy, and the director was a really, really nice guy who was really great to work with. I worked with this really great vocal coach who was like there in case we like forgot how to sing, and she was wonderful and she was like so nice, and she was on Zoom in the passenger seat next to me on a little screen listening to me on every take. And then I would look at her and check in with her after every take and be like, did I do good? And she would always be like, and she was just like really nice to me. Every time we like had a session together, they made me do like 3 vocal coach sessions with her, and every time we would like go through my songs and she'd be like, well, you're good, you don't need me. I'd be like, well, she'd be like, you do this right, you're a singer. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm a singer. I know how to sing. So that's a little bit more info on the McDonald's commercial. Hope that that's fun. The real Triple H says, I mean, like, you have the face of a recognizable celebrity. Does that make sense? Sure. Yeah. I'm trying to build that. I think that, like, the mustache and my hair being like this actually helps. I honestly think when I had shorter hair and no mustache, I just look like generic white guy. And I'm, like, not quite attractive enough to be, like, leading role white guy. And I'm not quite, like, weird enough looking to be character actor, which is what I am. I'm a character actor, as you've seen from my TikToks and stuff. But the mustache and the hair helps me lean into that character actor thing, and that more like, you see this and it's more like, oh yeah, it's that guy, it's my pal Austin. So yeah. Shara Bagel asks, where is Mary? I know that you're friends with her and she's in the other room, and she's reading. She got a new book that she's really excited for, and she's plowing through that thing. Mary reads like 3 books a day, I think. She's like pretty fast at it, and she's just plowing through this new book. Real Triple H. Yeah, but Seth Rogen, and he does not look like he should be famous. Seth Rogen doesn't look like he should be famous, but he sounds like he should be famous. That's a once in a generation voice right there. That's that John C. Reilly shit. That's what that is. That's what that is. That's that, like, when you got that voice, when you got that, like, John C. Reilly voice, like, oh, man, like, oh, ha, ha, like, that's, you're famous. You gotta be, you know? And then, like, John C. Reilly's, like, talented. He can sing. He can, you know, he's hilarious. He's got, like, you know, dramatic chops. And Seth Rogen's got that same thing going on, just like the, like, you got that. You can work with that, you know? Jim Jam Jerome with a follow-up question asks, just wondering where the optics are focused. How'd they find you? I think primarily right now, and Rain talks about this in the podcast, but primarily right now they are looking at, like, or they have been looking at musicians. That's Rain's background. Rain's a musician. She's a singer-songwriter. They've been primarily, like, hooking up musicians with other musicians. But she does talk on the podcast about how going forward, what she would like for Launch Left is to see them get into more different disciplines, to see them be able to have, you know, established directors and filmmakers, you know, help launch, say some up-and-coming talented filmmaker has a short film and, like, an established director like Damien Chazelle comes on and says, like, you should all watch this short film, you know, something like that. I don't know. I think that's what she would like to do is spread it out and get into more disciplines. But primarily right now it's been music, and I'm not sure where they're finding people. I don't know if they're finding people primarily through Instagram, primarily through TikTok. I'm fairly certain that someone else sent Rain a video of mine from TikTok, and that's how she heard about me. So as far as that question of, like, how do they find you? Yo, I don't know. All right, let's find another question here. Shara Bagel says, say hi. I sure will. I'll let her know that you said hi. In fact, I'll let her know right now. Mary! Sarah Nagel says hi. Sarah, she says hi. She says, I love Sarah Nagel, is what she said. I don't know if you could hear that. This isn't going on the podcast, by the way. Maybe it will. We'll see how entertaining it is when I listen back to it. But let's see if we've got any more questions about, or comments about, like, people getting launched, like stories that you've heard about how different celebrities got launched or how their careers got started. Questions that you have about show business, about... I don't know, did you listen to last week's episode about echo chambers, or the week before that about the police? Here we go, here's one. Gallery of Fun asks, how was your sense of humor received in the Mormon community growing up? Fine, I think. Fine, you know? I was always, like, a little bit of, like, a bad boy. Like, I was always willing to swear and stuff. And I came from a family that watched rated R movies regularly and stuff. So I don't know. But, like, I was always sort of, like, pushing the envelope with some of my friends. But no one ever was like, you need to knock it off with that stuff. Because I think that as a kid, my humor might have pushed envelopes or, like, boundaries. But it never was sacrilegious or, like, rude to the church, because I would not have done that. I was a stalwart, dyed-in-the-wool believer. And so even though I was willing to, like, push the envelope and maybe be a little bit more crass than some of my friends were, I never would say anything that was, like, considered, you know, questioning God or Jesus or Joseph Smith or the Book of Mormon. So it was fine. You know, and I don't think anyone that grew up with me would be surprised at all that I'm doing what I'm doing now. Like, I just was that person who loves the spotlight, loves to be the person who's got the funniest story around the campfire, who loves to be the person who's, like, doing voices and trying to make everyone laugh. That's me. So Kristen Newfer says, I don't know how I found you, but your videos are the bee's knees, spelled with Z's. Yeah, thanks. I don't know how you found me either. It's kind of like that question that Jim Jam Jerome had of, like, how do they find you? It's like, I don't know. I don't know how they find you. The algorithm. The algorithm has brought us together. Okay, Jim Jam Jerome. So what advice would you give to someone who has trouble overcoming their inhibitions, i.e. creating? It's tough, you know? It feels so dismissive when people ask you questions from a certain space. Like, when people are in a space where they're struggling to get out of bed and to find motivation or to feel confident about something that they do, it feels really dismissive to just be like, just do it. Just do it. Come on. Just go for it. It feels like I'm not hearing you and I'm not actually like respecting where you are or where you might be. But that is kind of the advice, is like somehow or other, you have to find a way to push through. You have to find a way to like get started. If you want to do this, if you want to make music, if you want to paint, if you want to be a sculptor, if you want to make art, you've got to just do it. At the beginning of the episode, we talked about Daniel Johnston, who was working at a McDonald's drive-thru, and the guy was riddled with different mental illnesses and still is to this day. And he was recording tapes of him playing guitar in his basement and handing them out to people on the street. And no one knew.